It was Christmas 1985. World of Sport was just finishing after 20 years on British TV. The Dukes of Hazzard was finally finishing after a six-year run.
Yep.
And Neighbours hadn't even started in the UK yet. It only just started in Australia. The top films
were Back to the Future.
Back to the Future.
Rambo Part 2. Rocky 4 with Vince DiCola's music.
The Goonies.
Yeah, it was Cocoon with Brian Dennehy. Spies Like Us with Chevy Chase.
Inexplicably making it to the top 10 box office films
and
of the year.
Also, this is great music in this year because we had Jewel of the Nile and they had a. What was the one that had the horrible. When the going gets tough!
Yeah, so 1985, obviously the peak of the 80s. This was the year. I mean, you could argue 1986 was a bigger year for shoulder pads, but you know, this was probably the year of the guitarist with his
rolled up sleeves.
on a suit jacket and a mullet. Yeah.
And best supporting actor in the Oscars went to Don Ameche for
Cocoon because he was nearly dead. So
yeah,
they just gave him, you know, the nearly dead Oscar.
Yeah.
So yeah, so that's basically giving you an idea of the atmosphere of the year 1985.
It was 80s.
It was 80s. Breakdancing was probably quite big at the time. I imagine Rubik's Cubes were around. You know, all of the kind of, you know,
He-Man was out.
All the kind of lazy generalizations that you expect in
Transformers.
Those, you know, we've gone back to the 1980s films.
Yeah.
What else was it famous for? Well, in our lives, it was famous for the Electron.
The Electron.
Which I got at Christmas. So really,
so that means we all got
yeah.
Christmas.
So really, we should be talking about 1986 rather than 1985.
Yeah,
because 1986 was the year that we actually played the thing. 1985, we got the
starter kit.
A couple of little games that came with it as a starter kit and the intro tape. That was the music to the intro tape. As you can see, it wasn't very melodic.
Just shit.
And you had lots of different programs on the intro tape. It was there to demonstrate the wide variety of different things you could do with a home computer. There is also...
could we hear the music again?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Get
wait
that catchy
wait,
tune.
Wait.
Now...
Now, apart from the intro tape, there was also a game called Snapper, which was nothing like Pac-Man.
No, he had feet.
He had feet and a hat.
He had feet and a hat. It wasn't.
Apparently...
your shit, he ain't got no feet. He's got feet and a hat and owls.
Yeah.
He's gangster.
Yeah. Yeah. They,
Munchy, motherfucker!
They gave him feet and a hat in order that they wouldn't get sued anymore by Namco, the original makers of Ridge Racer, for some reason. I don't know why Namco, who made Ridge Racer, was suing Acornsoft, but apparently they were, and it all had to do with Pac-Man.
Yeah.
There was also the other game, which was Boxer.
Boxer. Fantastic.
Oh,
It was like the arcade game that never was.
Yeah.
You got a lot of this on those old 8-bit platforms in the first like few years before they actually started doing decent games and knowing how to program. They all tended to just rip off arcade games.
And this one was especially ripped off.
And occasionally, like in the case of Boxer, they do try and do their own attempt at an arcade game.
Which made even less sense than Donkey Kong.
It was kind of like when you know, when a band does a cover version of a good band's, you know, or they just do like they're just a rip off of that band with none of the sort of the features that make that band entertaining. You know, they just maybe they look a bit like them, or you know, like when the Stone Temple Pilots first came out. And they were just seen as like a poor rip-off of
Operator.
Pearl Jam. Yeah, or you listen to Operator and you think...
And they
rip
off Chris Cornell.
Yeah. Only now, actually, I would probably prefer to listen to Operator than Chris Cornell and his horrible Timberlake bullshit.
Terrible.
Anyway,
So we'll just wait for him to come out with something good after.
Yeah. But apart from demolishing Chris Cornell's career, which obviously this small little podcast that no one's going to listen to,
he was in Soundgarden at this time as well.
What, in 1985?
Started in 1984. Mm. Yep, 1984.
Was he a drummer back then? Anyway, what are we talking about? We were talking
Electron Boxer.
Well, Boxer.
Boxer. It was a platform game. You had to collect all of the balloons, and the reason for that was so that you could win the heart of some pigtailed 6-year-old, by the looks of it.
Yeah.
But
and it was kind of think Donkey Kong.
Yeah.
Basically. Donkey Kong. Think Donkey Kong. That's what we're looking
at. And you also got things like in the enemy in Yao Kung Fu that threw like pots and pans. You had flying hammers.
Well, it's meant to be set in a gym, isn't it?
Yeah. And of course,
you know, the kind of things you get in gyms like flying hammers.
often.
Balloons. Yeah. Now maybe they got the idea for balloons from Rocky 3, where he's doing his training in that posh hotel foyer place.
When the club and Lang's training in like a basement with rats.
Yeah.
And there's Rocky poncing it up.
Bubbles and balloons.
Rocky, get the blow, Rocky. This ain't training, you bum.
Come on, Rocky.
We're not doing an audio reenactment.
No, it's based on Clubber Lang's training era. Because he had they threw hammers and spanners at him and everything because he was tough.
What else did they have? He had the other boxer had plants, didn't he?
What?
He had plant pots.
And for some reason, the other boxer. He was running around with plant pots and throwing them.
Yeah, and you couldn't kill him.
No.
You couldn't hurt him. You're meant to be a boxer. You couldn't actually hurt him. All you could do was pop balloons with your punches, which is quite an impressive trick.
And your hot pants.
Yeah, in your hot pants.
In your hot pants, yeah. Everyone had those Rocky III style short shorts on.
We like short shorts.
So you were getting plant pots thrown at you. You had to dodge spanners and hammers, and get up and down these ladders.
Don't forget dumbbells.
And dumbbells. And it got harder and harder each level.
The highest level we got to was level two.
No, back in the day,
on the emulator that we played recently, we didn't get very far at all.
Because it's fucking hard. You got no save points as well.
Yeah,
which is annoying.
Well, that was the same with most Electron games. You didn't really have save points.
A running theme of no save points, apart from Text Adventures, which we'll go into later.
Yeah.
Later ones.
But yeah, Boxer was a good game.
Okay, so.
Surprisingly good game.
So, we've looked at the sort of the first group of games we got. Mm-hmm. You know, these were the ones that we tended to play. There was also one more, which was which we'll talk about later, but there was a Text Adventure game called Sphinx Adventure. Which apparently is the worst adventure game that Acornsoft ever wrote, but to me it was excellent just simply because
it was the only one you had.
It was the only one I had, and it was, you know, something completely new to me. Mm. 1985 was a great year because we got the Electron, but 1986 was the year when it really started kicking in. We started getting some games for it, and you know, we really started learning how to do things like what I did anyway.
Jamie started
programming.
And I knew how to trip up wires and ruin all these programs.
Yeah, which we'll go into later on.
The legendary story.
Yeah, we'll go into that later on because I'm still not happy. I'm still not happy about that.
There'll be a duel at the end.
Now, there were games out at the time on the Spectrum and on the Commodore 64 that were, you know, big sellers. I mean, they were really the games machines. The Acorn Electron was the one that you got if your parents got suckered into thinking that computers could be educational. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they weren't wrong. I learned how to program on it.
Yeah.
So they weren't entirely wrong.
I'm glad we started on the Electron because we learned about how games were made.
Yep. I learned to be patient in loading screens.
Although, I learned how to program. I learned how to program around at George's house on his Spectrum 48K. When we wrote a program which would teach people how to breakdance.
Oh, fuck
it. Just to make it more 80s, it would teach people how to breakdance.
Oh, yeah, we must mention
with
this
blocky
period,
stick figures.
Jamie was breakdancing during this time.
You wouldn't believe it to look at me now, but I was actually mainly head. at that point. There wasn't much body there. So it was, I
had very, white gloves.
Very good at head spins and anything that required low body weight.
James, actually break that scene now. You can't stop.
Hold up.
Go on.
He's doing the caterpillar.
Wait.
Or is that the slug?
Right, he stopped. He's back.
Wow, Jim, that was good.
Fucking hell.
I thought you can do that.
No. Just for today. So, who were the big players in the Electron games market? First off, there was Acornsoft.
Yeah.
Who were, as the publisher most closely tied to the hardware, you know, they had the best programmers at the time. They did the best of the sort of early arcade conversions like Frogger, Pac-Man, etc. You know, whatever they tended to call them. They also published a small game written by two guys from Cambridge called Elite, but we'll be talking about that at a later date. Then there was Superior Software. Superior Software did the Repton series of games.
Shall I say it? Citadel.
They also did Citadel, which did come out in 1986, and which I did get. They also did a whole bunch of other games, Citadel-like, you know, and that was where they really excelled, was those kind of multi-screen arcade adventure type things. They did some racing games. I think they did a fighting game or two, maybe.
Firebird, they came out with a few games.
They mainly concentrated on Elite. And who else? Well, Bug Bite, who specialised in budget games, but they did come out with a couple of real good games for the Electron. Twin Kingdom Valley was one of theirs. Plan B was one of theirs.
Womble's Attack.
Yeah, Womble's Attack was not one of theirs, Tom.
That was written by Jason Nunn.
That was made up by Jason Nunn. And we're not going to talk about all of his made up games because we'd be here all the time.
Right, so Bug Bite, who you mentioned, they came out with four great games. Dungeons, Plan B 2, and Twin Kingdom Valley. Now, Dungeons was Charlie's favourite because it was a four-player gauntlet ripoff, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And we all played it four-player on that tiny little keyboard.
And fighting over the keys.
Yeah,
get out of my way! Keys,
having no space.
But that's something you couldn't do nowadays. Simply because no one would have it.
And because it was four player and there's only three of us. Right, so they had Plan B and Plan B 2, which were both...
Tom liked that game the most.
Mm. I thought it was a good game.
Why?
Graphically, it was nice. It was only like two colours.
Really, it didn't look any different than any Spectrum game of the time.
No, but we didn't have a Spectrum, and I thought it was quite stylized and cartoony looking.
So you went for graphics?
At the time, yeah. It was just basically a shoot 'em up. You're a little robot that to float around.
And it looked reasonably good.
Levels. Yeah. And Plan B 2 was the same sort of thing, but bigger levels.
Did you say it was like a sort of Spectrum sort of game?
Yeah, it looked kind of like a Spectrum.
Yeah.
But it was good.
Yeah. Interesting.
And Dungeons was different from Gauntlet you could go all around the maze. You weren't stuck on the same scrolling screen.
All the set of players had their own little screen, didn't they?
Yes. So you could be at any four corners of the maze without, you know, the computer having a heart attack like it would if you did it on the tried to do that in the arcade.
Yeah. Which is pretty good, really, considering it was an Electron.
Yep. And had sort of role playing elements in it that you could improve your stats, and you could just get mega nerdy like that. And it was generally quite good.
Yeah, you had a wizard, a barbarian,
a
ranger.
Magic user as well.
Wasn't that a wizard?
No, a magic user.
Oh, it was known as a magic
user. Magic user, barbarian,
ranger, and warrior.
And warrior, yeah.
So you could go around these levels separately, do your own thing, but you had to all get through, didn't you?
You had keys for different types of doors. You couldn't go through...
Yeah, you had to collect the keys for the right door.
Yeah.
I think so, anyway. It seemed that way. We couldn't open doors when we were using the wrong keys. Or it seemed, you know, that we were using the wrong keys. What other games were good?
What other games were good?
Yeah.
Other than Citadel.
Other than Citadel.
And Elite.
And Elite. We're not even going to talk about Elite.
PANIC!
Panic was done by Atlantis Software.
It was a budget game.
It was $1.99 when I bought it.
Yep. You were, I don't know, Percy or something like that, some shit like that, and you had a little spade or a hammer. It looked more like a hammer than a spade.
And well, it was a spade.
Yeah, but who knows? I think you hammered the holes in and filled them back in with your magic hammer. But it was a single screen platform game, and it was basically just like ladders everywhere.
Now there's three grades of monsters. There's purple ones, red ones, and blue ones. They go up in class if you fail to knock them through the hole once they've fallen into the hole.
Yeah.
If they can get back out of the hole, then they get more and more souped up until they're like the final blue guys.
Fucking nuts, basically. Cause they...
So to kill the monsters that were level 1, 2 or 3, you had to dig holes either 1, 2 or 3 levels deep in the platforms, which means you had to line up the holes, find yourself a path to be able to make a 3-level hole.
Yeah.
And not fall down it or anything. Although you could fall down the holes. It didn't actually kill you.
No.
And it didn't fill the holes in.
Which you didn't know first of all when you played it, because you'd dig a hole and you'd have to risk jumping down it. And because every other fucking game that you play on the Electron, you just fall down one level and you're dead, it seems, like every single game, yeah? You could die from anything, basically. But this, you're still alive, so you had a bit more... You're a lot tougher character. Most games.
You have balls.
Yeah, you have balls.
You have fucking balls.
It was quite easy, actually, in a way, if you knew the strategy. Which would work for about five, I found five levels worth, and you can do it.
Yeah. How recently did you find that out?
Today.
Right. So there's a simple strategy which will work, and that is...
Dig two holes, one either side of you,
and just wait there.
Because they just...
Kill off all the early ones,
and
then wait, and then you'll have to work a bit harder for the tougher ones.
Yeah.
Because you have to dig two levels deep then.
Or three levels.
Or three levels deep. Yeah. And they're annoying because what they do, the creatures in it, is they come right near you and then they go back the opposite direction, go back up the ladder. And then you're waiting there and waiting there and waiting there. And no doubt what happens is you dig yourself, you know, a perfect hole, get yourself ready, and then they'll go down to the bottom, go to the other side of the screen, come up the ladder that you went up, and then you're stuck with two holes either side, you know, hole either side of you, and you can't get out, and then you're dead.
Or you'll get bored of waiting, so you'll try and put a hole somewhere else.
Yes, you'll think, I'll take it on, you know, I'll be a bit more adventurous.
Yeah.
Yeah. But this was actually quite an easy game. But it wasn't as hard as, say, Vindaloo.
Talking of Vindaloo...
Well, Vindaloo was another platforms game. You didn't really have ladders in this one as such. You only went left and right, which was quite good. Simple controls. And all you had to do was make your way from the top of the screen to the bottom.
But there must have been a story, because who...
Well, you are Raj, and you've had the most terrible Vindaloo ever, and you basically got to get to the toilet.
Yeah.
And that is the game.
Right. That is the game.
And where is the toilet? At the end of the level? At the end of each level?
End of the game. Last level.
Right.
Yeah. Is the toilet.
Right. And it's a very, very hard game. Even though you've only got two keys, and there's no jump or anything like that, it's just left and right and fall.
I've got to admit, that's one of the hardest games I've played.
And it's just timing puzzles. Mm. That's all you have to do the whole game. It's all timing puzzles. You've got things that go up and down, and you have to, you know, judge when to go past them before they come down and crush you.
Yeah.
You've got platforms which go left and right, and you have to judge when to go on them and how quickly you have
it's
to
got
walk.
Everything basically.
Yeah, you've got all the
fuck Mario, for you know people think Mario's so hard. It's not. You play some of these games like Vindaloo, especially Vindaloo, and you'll think that's impossible. How do you do that?
And then when you go back to Mario, you can finish it.
Yeah, go back to Mario and finish it.
Yeah.
Which I did. I finished Mario. What? I didn't. But I can't do Mario, I'm fucking shit. I can do Panic. I've realised Panic is my level of game.
The other exciting thing about Vindaloo was that it was kind of quite high-res graphics compared to some of the other games. It was in Mode 1, which was the sort of 320 by 200 four-colour mode. So the graphics looked kind of arcadey.
Yeah, for years.
At the time. It looked pretty good, and still today it doesn't look too bad.
No.
They've chosen the colour schemes well anyway. For some reason, when you get to the end of the level, it farts at you.
Yeah, you hear it.
It does that as your bonus score is calculated up.
It's basically your sort of turtle's breath or whatever. When
I've heard when you do finish the game, you're on the toilet and you get a digitised sort of
noise.
Shit noise.
Yeah. What's next?
Dead Cells, an arcade adventure developed by a couple of Scandinavian guys, one of which was responsible for a lot of, well, the only real sort of demo on the BBC Micro, proper scrolling text type demo. So he was a pretty good programmer, and you had different objectives throughout the course of the game. Ultimately, your objective was to stop the evil dictator, whatever his name is, Romulus, I don't know. I just made that up.
You're making up.
The evil dictator, he was going to come and invade your planet with his aliens. He had a teleport, which obviously would have made that easier. So you have to destroy the teleport. And the only way you can destroy the teleport is by collecting 5 crystals. And then you go to his place, his planet.
Pad?
Yeah, his pad. And there's his crown sitting on a chair, which I presume must be the throne. Or something like that.
You take
the crown, and then when you go back, you destroy the teleport. I don't know how the crown destroys the teleport, but that's the level of logic you're dealing with at the end of the game. But the rest of the game makes sense. You've got...
to us, it did, anyway.
Yeah.
It had graphics.
You've got gunpowder, a cannonball, and a cannon, and you have to blow a hole in a wall to get through to another bit of the game.
Another bit where you have to collect a chicken.
There's a bit where you have to collect a chicken and then cook the chicken and then go into a temple. And if you're armed with the chicken, you can go past because they take the chicken as a sacrifice or something. I don't know. An offering to the gods.
Yeah.
So you don't get destroyed by this weird face thing that comes out of
flying faces that come after you.
Yeah.
Faces.
There's also other bits, like you have to get some herbs or something and create a potion that kills a witch. Well, there's loads of different puzzles, and it all chains together. Like, you don't necessarily just do puzzle number one, and then it's straight onto puzzle number two. It's not sharply separated like that. So you'd get one bit of something that will help you do puzzle number one, and then another bit of something that will help you do puzzle number three in the same location, or in roughly the same place. So you'd have to try and sort of keep a bird's eye view of the whole game.
Yeah.
So that you could work out which bits went where.
And you could be a man or a woman as well.
Yeah, it was probably the first game where you could do that.
Didn't do anything. Just gave you.
Yeah, it made you no difference. You just got like your hair, and so your hair
was a bit long.
Was a bit longer if you were a woman.
Then you nagged a lot.
And yeah. And you had to. It was a different game. You had to do like
washing up. Lots of cleaning.
But she could cook the chicken better.
She was better at cooking
the chicken, but she wasn't so good at killing the.
Or like the puzzles.
Yeah. What did those guys look like anyway? Those things. They looked like
The monks.
Yeah.
They look like the is it Jawas or something?
Yeah, that's what they look like. The ones
we're
like
not
Star Wars.
Wars geeks. We like the films, the first three. But we don't know anything really, but I know they're Jawas because I've probably heard it a million times.
Yeah, that's what they look like. They look like those, monks. They had monks' habits on, but no faces.
Yeah.
And little eyes, and you had to shoot them in the eyes.
But they were like fucking 8 foot tall.
Yeah, they were bigger.
Or you were a dwarf.
Yeah, you were like a kid. It looked like. So it was a good game. It was quite big, which was good value for money. It was in Mode 2 graphics, which was rare in those days, because most of the games were... like, any game that had a decent size to it would have been in some, like, two-colour mode, or, you know, it wouldn't have been in one of the Mode 2, one of the sort of high-memory modes.
Yeah.
So there wasn't much room left for the game, which meant, on the BBC, it didn't really make much difference. But on the Electron, because you had even less memory to deal with, it meant that you had a border of crap at the top and the bottom of the screen. Yep. Essentially, there was no space left in the memory. So they'd actually put some of the game code and data in the top and bottom of the screen.
So
the memory bled over. So you had a board, like a top and bottom border of randomness, and then the game in the middle. So there were a bunch of like real proper rip-offs of Citadel. Well, I suppose two main ones.
Yeah.
The Golden Figurine, which I played quite a bit.
Yeah. And, well, what was the other one?
Camelot. I think it was called Camelot, wasn't it?
Yeah. The Baron, which is...
The Baron, yeah.
Bigger graphics and terrible.
Yeah. Then there were the sort of the official quote-unquote sequels.
Yeah. Which was... It was originally called 4. No. Renamed to Citadel 2.
Yeah, yeah. But it, I think it was meant to be Citadel 2.
Yeah, it was meant to be, but it wasn't.
Yeah.
And there was that one.
Then there was Palace of Magic, which actually did get advertised as being very similar to being Citadel 2, but it wasn't Citadel 2.
No, it wasn't as good.
And that was basically it. There were some other games that came out around that time, or a bit later on, which were sort of high-res versions.
Right.
You know, they had high res graphics, less colours and everything, but probably better coding in terms of like the movement and everything.
Yeah, it probably looked better, but who knows, you know.
Fuck 'em.
Word to your mother.
You know, Citadel was probably the best non-3D game on the Electron, which gives you an idea what the best one was, really.
Yeah.
It was Star Clash by Gremlin.
Yeah.
So is that your sum up of... Citadel.
Yeah, okay, that's Citadel. So let's. What about some other ones? Well?
Well, one that Charlie was playing quite a lot was Felix and the Evil Weevils.
So, tell us about Felix meets the Evil Weevils.
Well, you're Felix, you're the exterminator, and you've basically got to kill these weevils. You get a bug spray, you've got to spray these weevils. You can collect letters for bonuses, for points.
Right.
But I didn't know that when I first played it. I thought you just had to collect the letters and go onto the flashy platform.
Which is what the weevils do to get to turn to super weevils.
Evil.
To turn evil, yeah.
It looks like it's probably a rip-off of an arcade game, but seeing as we don't know what the arcade game is, we can't say. But I wouldn't be too surprised seeing as the first Felix game, Felix and the Fruit Monsters, is kind of a rip-off of Pac-Man.
Pac-Man, what are you talking about? I've never heard of Pac-Man.
Felix...
I've only heard of Snapper.
Oh yeah, Snapper, I forgot. He's got boots and a hat.
Boots and a fucking hat.
Felix in the Factory, which was the sequel, I think, was basically like Panic or Monsters, based on Space Panic, the original arcade.
Yeah.
And...
So Micropower were just rip-offs.
Yeah.
So anyway, so this looks very much like it's a rip-off of an arcade, but we don't know what the arcade is. You have conveyor belts, which you can collect, like a joystick, I think. It's like a lever.
Yes, a lever.
And I think that switches the direction of the conveyor belt. Of course, the best bit about Felix Meets the Evil Weevils is the dead body.
Yeah, the corpse, when you die.
The game doesn't just stop there and then and freeze like it would on some of the old arcade games.
They trample over your body as it falls down each tube.
Yeah, you slide along the conveyor belts, your corpse, and slides down the tubes to the bottom of the screen.
Your small dead corpse.
Yeah. But the real best thing about Felix Meets the Evil Weevils was nothing to do with the game at all.
No.
It was actually to do with Charlie. Why don't you tell us the story of why Felix Meets the Evil Weevils means so much?
No.
I will. One day, it was breakfast time in the Armour household. Mm. And Charlie, who was never gets his own breakfast, decided...
for once in his life...
that he would get his own breakfast. And what a mistake he made on this...
Fateful day.
It was 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
It's 2 o'clock in the afternoon. He just watched Neighbours, and
he decided to have some Weetabix.
Yes.
Mmm, I love Weetabix.
Weetabix, put the milk on.
Yeah.
Put the sugar on.
The thing was, he told me to get the milk out of the fridge. Right. I got the milk out. And I poured it on.
Mm.
And as I was looking...
And I looked at my my bowl, and I saw my Weetabix moving.
So Charlie was eating Weebles. They're all on his teeth. You see them moving around.
It wasn't like the Grinch. He didn't have weevils on his teeth like the Grinch.
He's a mean one.
So that's why Felix meets the evil weevils. If only just because...
That's the only reason they wanted me to say about the game.
Yeah.
That's the only reason
we remember the game, to be honest. It's an utterly forgettable game otherwise. Raven Skull.
What about it?
What's it about? Well, I think the story's something about there's another evil dictator.
Evil Weevil.
There's an evil Weevil, and you are a Weetabix. And you get infested by...
You live in the land of Weetabix, and evil Weevils have taken over. No. Raven Skull was a game that flattered to deceive. It looked like Gauntlet, and so you expected it to be that kind of game. It was a top-down... fantasy, you could choose one of four characters, much like Gauntlet, but in actual fact it was just yet another incarnation of Superior Software's Repton with a bit of Citadel mixed in.
Yeah, you could be an adventurer, a warrior, an elf, or a wizard.
But another piece of interest is that Martin Edmondson was a developer who went on to do things like Shadow of the Beast for Psygnosis, went on to the Amiga, and also I think they went on to do Driver, the Driver series of games.
I think he did
PlayStation.
Dig Dug as well.
No, I don't think he did Dig Dug. I think you made that up.
Okay, I know he did One Wolf's Attack. If it wasn't Jason, then it was him. Yeah. It was one of them.
Apparently there is a difference between the BBC and the Electron versions, which is that the BBC you could get a speed scroll, which would make everything scroll at nut speed, and you could it would make it virtually impossible.
Take your explosive, that's what you do.
It's the sort of Ben Johnson scroll, and on the Electron you didn't have that.
And the Ben Johnson, you could actually be Ben Johnson, so you were an adventurer, a wizard, an elf, a warrior, and Ben Johnson.
Yeah. And in that, you had to get little injection needles instead of the shields.
And there was a sample as well. It said, Narachi.
Yeah, and instead of a silver crucifix, it was a gold medal you had to get.
Yeah, you had to try and collect back your gold
medal. You were in Castle International Olympic Committee.
Yeah. So it was a little different on the BBC to Electron.
Yeah. So basically, the speed scrolls were omitted from the Electron version.
Why?
Because the Electron was too slow to handle the speed scrolls, and it was doing software scrolling, so that the BBC, with its hardware scrolls, a lot easier, could just do, It had a really good title screen, and if you look closely, you will see it looks very similar to one of the screens on Shadow of the Beast.
Mm-hmm. When you died.
When you died, and it's, They stuck on the actual screen Shadow of the Beast. What did they put on? Big ears, basically.
Yeah, something like that.
That was it.
More animal-like.
Yeah. But he was... It was essentially the skull of a vampire on the... he had feet and a hat.
Ours get feet in a hat, fucker! But we made the original game. The adult medicate not got fucking feet in a hat.
Yeah.
How about
feet
hair?
In a hat.
Well, that's the difference.
Hair as well.
That's the difference between this version of Raven Skull and Repton. In that Repton had feet, and in some versions of the game he had a hat.
See? That's the difference in games.
Yeah.
You want to make a game? You want to rip off whatever Halo 3? Give him different feet and a hat. Yeah, yeah.
Who still make games.
Yep, still make games and still make you pay for them because they're fucking cheap bastards.
Yeah, they still make you pay for all that. Well, they don't really. You can download the old Superior Software games. But if you want to play them on the PC with much more PC-like graphics, whether that's better or not, I don't know.
Superior graphics, superior sound.
Yeah.
and it's exactly the same game but looks worse. I don't know how they've done it, but it made it look worse.
But if you want to pick it up and put it in the bin, you can.
Yeah, do it.
I would.
So would I.
And that's about it, really.
That's Raven's car.
Text Adventures were kind of ideally suited to the Electron. Right, Text Adventures were probably my favourite games at the time, but I only had three, well, four.
What did you play them on, Jamie?
I played them on the Acorn Electron.
Right,
well done. Okay.
And the good thing about Text Adventures on the Acorn Electron, as opposed to other computers at the time, were that it had a good keyboard, probably the best keyboard of all the 8-bit PCs,
yeah.
Compared to something like the Spectrum, which had a shite keyboard.
That's how shit things were then! Good keyboard!
Yeah, we had a good keyboard, and it had a text mode, which a lot of the games were done in, so it used a lot less memory than the graphical modes. Which meant, obviously, that you wouldn't have sort of loads of pictures stored or anything like that, you know, because these were tape games.
Yep.
So, you know, you'd have to switch from one mode to the other to display graphics, like they did in the first game I'm going to talk about, which is probably the best of the graphic adventures that I had, a game called Twin Kingdom Valley, which I got in a compilation tape, 5-star games, which also...
Was that sold separately as well?
It was sold separately by Bug Byte.
It's probably expensive at the time, wasn't it?
I don't think so. I think Bug Byte were fairly cheap.
Oh, so sort of budget people.
Yeah. And the good thing about Twin Kingdom Valley was that it had graphics.
Yeah.
Which most of the other games on the Electron didn't have, especially tape games. And it was quite clever how it did the graphics. Although they didn't actually look that brilliant, most of them.
No.
But it kind of drew the graphics itself. And it used kind of clip art, almost. So, for example, a forest would be built up of lots of the same tree graphics shown at different scales.
Yeah.
And the castle would be drawn exactly the same level of detail if it was right far in the distance. So you'd see each individual brick being drawn on the wall of the castle. In tiny little detail, which you wouldn't be able to make out because the resolution was so low that you couldn't actually see that.
No, it made a difference.
But when it got close...
Wasting their fucking time.
Yeah, but when it got...
To tell the computer, stop wasting our time.
Yeah, and it took a long time to see those graphics. The other good thing about Twin Kingdom Valley was that the characters were somewhat independent. They weren't just random events like you get in a lot of adventure games at that time. Pretty much, you'd get a dwarf at a golf and steal your treasure. You'd get a greedy dwarf.
They were guaranteed. They were guaranteed that you would be followed by a giant fucking elf all the time.
No, it could be a troll. It could be something else.
It's a giant elf, and you wouldn't. You can't.
But that was only when you went to the pub.
Was a prick.
It was only when you went to the pub, and it was only because the giant elf was at the pub that time that you played it.
How do you get rid of him? You don't.
Yeah.
You do this whole big quest. You fight. This and that, you know, you're right at the end and you win, and it will say, you are the Grand Warrior, and you're followed by a giant elf. Every fucking time, no matter where you are, you go to the toilet.
Because he wants to take your glory.
Elf. Yeah, he's a glory hunter.
Well, no.
Should have fucking chopped
his head. Because he goes back to the pub and said, I
can you stab the elf?
It's not exactly, you know.
Yeah.
It's not exactly artificial intelligence, you know, that we're talking about here. I mean, it is meant to be AI, but it's fairly basic. But they do have. You know, reactions to you. So they can be hostile, they can be friendly, and you can change their mood by offering them things.
Which is good.
Yeah.
It's like those, the books that you'd get, the adventure game books.
Yeah, and the graphics. If anyone played The Hobbit on the Spectrum, or any of those computers, you've got an idea what the graphics were like, because it's that kind of abstract-looking, you know, line-drawn, geometric shapes built into objects. And okay, so that's Twin Kingdom Valley. What other games did I have? Well, I also had Dodgy Geezers.
George is down the building site looking for a steady job. director's lost his license because they drive like a bit of a yob. Cracker's on the rampage, he's got a detonator in hand. And Sackby's in the nightclub drinking lagers and getting tanned. Well, he would do, wouldn't he? Bulging geezers! They're only nice lads that aren't.
That was great music.
That's the start of the theme tune to Dodgy Geezers, which is on the tape, on the back side of the tape.
Yeah.
And it also has...
It was the back side.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's very kind of Chaz and Dave. But it has a lot of clues as to the actual game. Tells you about the characters of the game and does give you a couple of little clues about how to, you know, complete certain things and where to find people.
So you had
people.
To listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
We just enjoyed the
We just enjoyed the music.
The fact there was music on the other side of a game. That blew my mind.
Yeah. I know it had been done. There were games that were actually designed to be played alongside music on Spectrum and stuff. But on the Electron, you know, this was a first. It was done by... some guys from Melbourne House, who also did The Hobbit, the software company.
Loads of games.
They did a bunch of different games that were kind of set in the real world. They weren't wizards and warlocks and dragons and treasure and stuff, and dwarfs stealing your treasure. It was
robbery.
Yeah, in this game you just got out of prison for your first day out as a free man after, I presume, another robbery.
Yeah.
And you're trying to put a team together for a job, a bank job. And, you know, there's gangsters involved. There's, you know, there's a lot. It's quite a funny game. It's got quite a good sense of humour about it, as did all of these guys' games. The pair of people that did this game also did Hampstead, where you were meant to be a kind of a middle-class bloke trying to become upper-class. So you had to do the right things, wear the right things, and say the right things. And then there was Terra Molinos, where you were basically in a dodgy Spanish hotel, and you just had to try and survive your holiday.
Very 80s, this game.
Yeah.
Very 80s.
But, you know, at least they had somewhat of a sense of humour. And, you know, they were novel in their settings. It wasn't just the same old, you know, we're going to... You're being... Your land is being enslaved by the evil wizard Andrex.
Yeah.
And you must go through the land and, you know, get the treasure of the anus.
You're followed
of the
by
dragon.
A giant elf. I was playing Dodgy Geezers and I went into like the pub and it said you're followed by a giant elf again. He wouldn't fuck off. He's followed me into another game. How do you kill the elf?
So when we actually do go out to pubs?
I'm followed by a giant fucking elf. How do you kill him? How do you get rid of him? Does he just disappear one day?
But we're talking about a different game now.
Sorry, let's go back to
we're talking about Dodgy Geezers. And, Dodgy Geezers was written in a text adventure creation environment called The Quill, which was used quite a lot in the old 8-bit days. The equivalent would be something like Inform on the PC. If any of you guys actually used do any kind of text adventure or interactive
guys,
fiction
us.
Nowadays. listeners.
Yeah, yeah. Us, not us.
I also had a game called Time Machine by, I think it was a Scott Adams adventure. Scott Adams was kind of the early pioneer of text adventures on microcomputers. Because
right.
Prior to that it would be an adventure on a deck mainframe.
A deck taker.
Yeah. let's talk about the difficulty level of Electron games. Well, it's quite varied. On the one hand, you could have games that were absurdly easy.
Badly made.
Badly made games. And on the other hand, you could have games that were virtually impossible.
The good games.
Well, I'd say if you look at Citadel, it wasn't easy.
No.
But it wasn't impossible. You know, it was playable. You could play quite a way through that game.
Yeah, but you could do it nowadays, but you'd have save points. Then.
Yeah, no, I know you had...
That's why it was...
I know you had no save points in the early days, so those big games did actually take, you know, if it was 5 hours of play, you'd have to play it there and then for five hours. But what I mean was, you know, the only difficulty in that is, you know, having to go and eat your dinner or, you know, the basic stuff.
You have to
play
it really early in the morning.
Yeah, the basic stuff, you know. Which, you'd only really get to play it on weekends.
So I suppose, in a way, nowadays, you know, the games are a lot easier, but you could, you can play them for, like, 5 minutes or something. If you have a quick play on them, I mean, like, turn it off. But then it was, like, it was an adventure.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, back then, you also had games where it was a lot more reliant on, you know, pixel-perfect movement and timing problems, as we mentioned.
Bad collision detection, that's what it was down to.
Well, not all of them had. I think most of them had pretty good collision detection. I think most of them were all right on that side of things. I just think it was, you know, the way that the game was made, you just had to, you know, one wrong move and you were fucked in a lot of those games. I mean, look at Repton, for example.
Jumping into a pit accidentally, one little like freak hand attack and you've hit something and you're dead.
Yeah.
But these games, you were dead. That was it. You start again, back at the start.
Yeah. I mean, the only real saving grace was that at least they didn't make you load the game again.
Oh, for fuck's sake, I'd kill myself.
Yeah. Unless someone turns it off.
That's the thing, I wasn't like, oh no, loading. Oh, remember that game? It took so long to load. At the time then, I wasn't like that. I was just, you know, excited to be playing a game.
And the thing was, you were actually excited if a game took a long time to load, because the chances are it was going to be good.
The shorter it took, it was going to be shit, unless it was Panic. I didn't mind waiting for Citadel. You got a good screenshot. Yeah. Good title screen, I mean. Yeah.
And, you know, the bigger the game, the more complex the game, the more it was going to load.
Yeah.
And some games, in fact, were multi-load games.
Or you'd wait really long for a game, and then he found out it wasn't actually working.
Yeah. The worst thing was where you'd be waiting 20 minutes for the game to load, and then you'd find out, it's a program error or load error, and then you try rewinding the tape a bit and seeing if it would pick up that block again, and sometimes that would work, but sometimes that wouldn't.
It never worked with me. Never. And programming as well. You did a lot of programming on it.
Yeah, I did some programming, and, you know, it was very difficult to, you know, save anything. You could save some things, but it was, you know, you'd really need to develop a disk drive or a development environment or something.
Because you could be, like, spending, I don't know, 2 or 3 days writing your own text adventure, and then someone bursting into your room and tripping over the adapter wire.
I wonder who that was, Tom.
And, erasing everything.
Yeah, and destroying your
3 days of your hard solid work. So what did you do? Did you actually have the computer on all night?
Yeah, it was a fire risk. Especially on those old days where everything would get boiling hot. But
well, like when I asked, can I go and use the computer? And I went in there and I put the wrong adapter in and it blew up in my face. Like mammy moment.
Yeah, Tom went for one of those, you know the moments in Tom and Jerry which no longer appear in a lot of the cartoons.
Cartoon Network versions of it, yeah.
You know, the moments where, I don't know, let's say a bag of soot explodes.
Yeah.
Or
is it Tom's tail is lit and it goes all the way to his face.
Yeah.
And then it's cut.
Because you know it's going to be... Yes'm. It's a yes'm. It's a Tom and Jerry's mammy moment.
Yeah. And Tom had one of them himself where he blew up my adapter.
How the fuck did that happen? That's incredible.
Because you plugged my adapter, my Electron adapter, into a keyboard.
Yeah.
That's what happened. It was the wrong voltage.
But the Electron was fine.
And it blew up. It blew up the adapter was fine, but the plug...
Oh yeah, your plug socket.
Yeah,
the plug had marks
black.
For years.
Did you not also put your tongue
on a battery because you told me to do it?
No, on the adapter.
On the adapter, you told me to get plugged in. Yeah, Tom, it's like when you put your tongue on a battery. Yeah. So, I don't know, why did I do it? It's like when you made me swallow a whole
Well, I didn't make you swallow a whole
spoon of chili powder. Come on, Tom, try this.
It wasn't a whole spoon of chili powder.
So I tried it.
It was a bit of chili powder, but it was just raw chili powder. It was no...
It wasn't a bit, it was fucking loads! Yeah, I cried. It was horrible.
I admit I might have been a bit of a cunt.
A bit, a lot.
Yeah.
But it didn't matter because I was a dick anyway when I was little.
Yeah. That's enough of that bullshit. Let's sum up. What do you guys think about the Electron? Who's going to go first?
Tom. Okay, I'll go first. I'm going to say the games is the best thing for me because it was a huge jump from the... Yeah, I know an Electron is a huge jump from something, but it was from the Atari 2600 that we had and, you know, playing Spider-Man on that and Empire Strikes Back. Going from that to Citadel and Raven Skull and Repton, it was massive, and it was obviously my first like proper computer and first time actually playing a full game.
Okay, well, I like the Electron not just because of the games. It's I used to be able to program my own sound onto it. I even had graphics. So I made a little demo out of the Electron.
At 3 years old.
At 3 years old, yeah. No, I think I was about 7 years old, but I say about five.
Take it sound cleverer.
So I sound clever. And that's basically what I liked about the Electron. I could program.
I liked the Electron for both of the reasons that you two just said, especially how they came together for me, which was in developing text adventures or learning how text adventures were developed. It taught me a lot about programming and stood me in good stead for my later playing about on the Amiga and then eventually getting into programming as a career. So if it wasn't for programming, I probably wouldn't be a fat nerd. Okay, so that's the end of the first Games Graveyard podcast.
Mm-hmm.
If you listen to future ones, you'll find us speaking about other 8-bit machines and possibly 16-bit machines. And we'll definitely be going on to consoles at some point in the future, so that Tom's got something to say.
And even me, but our next podcast will be about the Amiga.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay.
Prepare for that.
A massive jump in graphics and power.